Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 13 of Back in the Lifeboat, a podcast where we watch and recap every episode of the series Timeless. I'm Helen, and I'm here with my co-host, Heather.
Hey, guys.
And today we're covering season one, episode 13, Karma Chameleon. And as usual, you know the drill. We'll do a quick episode of review, then we'll get into the thick of things, and then we'll go over overall thoughts and Heather's theories for what's coming. Because believe it or not, we're approaching the end of the season. It's like
that's crazy.
Three more episodes after that. The episode description on Rotten Tomatoes. Wyatt and Rufus go rogue and travel back to the 80s to save Jessica. Lucy has a disturbing meeting with Anthony Brühl, and Anthony makes a shocking confession. Did he really make a shocking confession, really? I cannot speak. I'm still half asleep, and it's not nearly as early for me as it is for Heather, so I don't know how she does it. It originally aired January 30th, 2017, and it was written by Anne Coffle Sanders. That's her second and last episode that she writes. I mean, I feel like she's credited as one of the main writers. She's on the show till the end. The other one that she wrote was The Alamo. And she also remains a co-executive producer for the rest of the show. And but we so we talked about her credits in back in The Alamo. And the episode is directed by Greg Beeman, and that's his second out of five episodes, the first one being the Watergate tape.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I feel like they have a similar, like, I don't know, there's something similar about them. I couldn't say vibe.
Yeah, you can tell the feel is there's something. Yeah, I agree. Before we really get into the episode, we never really went over what our main cast has done before or anything upcoming for them. So we thought we'd cover maybe one every episode, the same way we do with the guest stars and we've been doing the last few episodes. So today we'll talk about Abigail Spencer. She's been around for a minute. She started actually on All My Children, which I feel like a lot of actors start on, like, those soaps. Like, there's a lot of them that starts on soap. I forgot, but she has like a certain amount of, like, whatever character she played was in like a bunch of episodes. Like, at least a dozen or something. I forgot the number exactly, but like, she was there for a minute. I mean, she had guest star roles in a lot of shows. The most notable slash famous would be Mad Men. Suits, too. And Grey's Anatomy. And I think that was more recent than the rest. I didn't put the dates here. Fun fact, though, she had like a role in one episode of Private Practice before she was on Grey's Anatomy. Like, you know, it's like a reuse character across spinoffs. That's always fun. Her first main cast role was on a show called Angela's Eyes, and I've looked for it, you guys. I've looked for it. I spent an hour just scouring the internet and all the website that I could think of, and I cannot find it. I went on eBay, and at some point, there was an auction for the DVD of that show. And it was a past. I've put an alert on eBay. I've got nothing left. If anybody hears that and knows how to get that DVD, name your price. I'm interested. I want to see that show. It looks good. But at the very least, the premise looks interesting. I've seen a couple of clips on YouTube, but that's about as far as it gets. I think the story was she plays a woman that so as a teenager, her parents are arresting their like Russian spies or something like that. So like they've lied to her whole life, basically. And so now she can't tell if someone is lying to her, so she becomes a cop like that, and her secret powers in a way is that she knows when people are lying.
Interesting.
That's something. It was only one season, but I really wanted to see it. But yeah. She was also one of the main casts on a show called Rectify, and I watched the like first 10 minutes of the pilot, and it looked good, and I have no idea why I stopped. But I'll definitely get back to it. And I gotta watch Suit at some point. There's apparently Suits is making a comeback, and it's really good. Like I gotta get there eventually. Maybe the fact that Abigail's on it is gonna encourage me to do so.
Yeah, I watched a
But
few episodes in the beginning, maybe the first couple seasons, but I haven't watched it really since then.
I also canceled my Netflix, so I'll have to reactivate that. But there's a couple shows that I need to reactivate it from at some point. What's exciting though is that Abigail has a new show coming up this season. It's TV season. It's called Extended Family. It's a comedy with John Cryer and Donald Faison, which looks really fun, actually. She was on the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade promoting it, and it looks really fun. So it's about divorced ex that basically decides instead of the kids going back and forth between their two houses, they're gonna all live together basically to take care of the kids. And she's newly engaged to, so John and Abigail play the divorced couple, and she's engaged to the character played by Donald Faison. That looks interesting. I'll definitely tune in because we can all use some funny shows right now.
For sure.
So we all know One Chicago is gonna break our hearts. Looks like Fire Country is not gonna be far behind. So, no, yeah, some comedy sounds good. All right, you're ready to get into it.
Let's go.
It's time to get back in the lifeboat, people. And today we start at Lucy's house, and someone's banging on the door. It's nighttime. So she goes down the stairs and opens the door in her robe and whatnot, and it's Wyatt. Wyatt has come to tell her about his plan to steal the lifeboat with Rufus to go get Jessica back. And
Which will work perfectly and nothing will go wrong.
absolutely not. There's zero foreshadowing either. Like it's actually a very uninteresting episode because it just goes so smoothly and Jessica's back at
Yep.
the end. But I like the second he tells her the plan, like she goes full mom mode. And she's like, "You're gonna get into so much trouble. Like this could go wrong. This could go wrong."
Well, I took
But
that as
like,
her as like, you know, the star student mode, like the teacher's pet.
yeah, a little bit. But what I love too is that basically it's just like one little argument, and then Wyatt basically says, "I'm still doing it anyway." She's like, "Okay, I'll come."
Yep.
It's a very Hermione things to do.
Oh, yeah, very.
Yeah. Oh, now that I think about it, I mean, minus the romance part of thing, but they're very much the Harry Potter trio.
Yeah, I mean, they all fit in that mold very well.
Like, we got Lucy who's Hermione, Wyatt is Harry, Rufus is Ron. Fits. But anyway, so yeah, Lucy's ready to go and break some rules. But Wyatt stops her because she still has the deal to get her sister back, and he doesn't want to endanger that. And so she lists like all the way that they might need her, like, okay, but what if you need a historian? What if you need this or that? And he's got an answer for everything, and he just tells her to call Agent Christopher after giving them a head start, and so she's covered and she doesn't get in trouble, which, like, yeah,
Yeah.
that's very much the plausible deniability. But also, we'll get there a bit later, but if he had not told her at all, she'd be covered too. I'm
Yeah.
just
Well,
saying.
and like, I mean, I feel like he probably thought he owed it to her to let him know what's going on, but I do think that they show a big oversight from Agent Christopher here, 'cause he knows Lucy has a deal. He doesn't have one. And like, yes, his wife is not disappeared from the timeline, but he's sitting there looking at a time machine every day, which Lucy points that out later. But it's like
Also,
they're
he's a
depending strictly on
soldier.
Wyatt's job to keep him in check. And eventually that's not going to work. And this is the eventually.
But yeah, like Wyatt says, like, nobody's getting hurt. I've done my research.
Yeah, that's like,
Sure.
yeah.
Like it might as well have foreshadowing, like, tattooed across his forehead.
Yeah.
But so at this point she kind of crumbles and sits down on the stairs and has a moment when she's crying a little bit, and boy, yeah, like, he can't even look at her when she starts crying. Like, it's, he feels all kind of things. He's just, it's hard. It's a hard
Yeah, and you can
moment
tell
for
like
her.
how desperate he is in this scene of like, he knows that he's gonna lose her. He's gonna lose basically everything that they've had for this time team. And but he can't
Yeah, like,
not, you know.
again, I do think at this point Lucy and Wyatt, they have that connection, but it's not just about losing each other. It's about losing that found family that they've really starting to gain. And it's also, and I think even especially for Lucy, losing some stability after her whole life was completely overturned with, Noah, her mom back, Amy gone. That team, however messed up this whole situation is of changing the timeline or trying to protect the timeline, this team is kind of that established, like, a constant since that happened. So
Yeah.
losing that, it's rough.
Yeah, and you can tell he's like kind of throughout the episode he's like, all this is happening, but I get Jessica back. All this is happening, but I get Jessica back. Which kind of makes the end more devastating.
Yeah, it's, how do you call that? Like, it's almost like a mantra. Like, he's got to convince himself, like, it's terrible, but I get Jessica back, but I get Jessica, it's worth it. So I can't, I like it's his justification, not just to other people, but to himself too.
Yeah.
And so she doesn't really try to change his mind because I think she knows that she can't. And so they have a little goodbye moment, and it says, like, thank you, ma'am. 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 With the Lyatt theme in the background. And someone here is a mess, and that someone is me. The Lyatt theme, it just brings all the tears. All the tears. I love them.
Yeah, I mean, this is where Lucy kind of points out too, like this might be the last time she ever sees him, which is like you can tell it's like sad. Like obviously I don't think that's what's gonna happen personally. But like for
I
them in
mean,
this
it's not
moment,
like
yeah, like that's
that
like okay,
Matt
this is it.
Lanter is a main cast through the entire series,
Yeah.
but yeah, it's a very good, like, it's a heartbreaking moment, but it's, I love this scene. But it really shows, yeah, really the desperation, like the beginning of that desperation that at least that last string of it through this episode, because we've seen it rise in Wyatt for the last few episodes for sure. And so we cut to Mason Industries, and Wyatt pretends to hold Rufus at gunpoint. Rufus could pretend to be scared, but honestly, he doesn't even try.
No, I think he's at this point, he's like, they're not gonna believe you anyway.
Yeah, it's well, I mean, even Wyatt knows it. He just calls it like it's plausible de deniability because I have a gun on me. So, but yeah, he makes Wyatt promise he's not gonna hurt anyone. Which I'm sure he means it. I'm sure he like Wyatt doesn't want to hurt anybody. It's just, oh, this episode is basically like a downward spiral.
Very much so.
We get a little bit of background here because Rufus says he was born in December that year. So he was born in December 1983. And according to the article in 103, Wyatt was 27 in February 2012. So he was born in 1985. I did the math. It's funny, I never thought that Rufus was older than Wyatt, honestly.
Yeah, but a couple of years, it's not too much of a difference.
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, like, 80, he was born December 83, so it's probably more like year and a half-ish. But I don't know, in my head, at least when I first watched, I always thought Wyatt was the oldest of the bunch.
I always thought it was
And
Lucy.
I think Lucy is slightly older than Wyatt, even. I forget if and when we know that. G is definitely the youngest.
Yeah, for sure.
There's
I
some.
did you notice Rufus's shirt in this scene?
No, I didn't pay
It
attention.
has a dodo bird on it, which is an extinct bird. So I thought that was interesting because they were like going back in time to basically make the serial killer extinct. But I didn't know if that was any kind of,
It could be.
wardrobe department nod or what.
That's a good choice. That's a very good choice. I like the little funny fashion statements.
Yeah.
It's like, what did you pick us for us to wear? Wyatt goes like, I don't know, something shiny, which he did not, by the way. He was very tame in his choice.
Yeah.
And
Really was.
Rufus goes like, I swear if there's parachute pants in that bag. That's funny, because like we all know that the 80s was a the 80s and 90s and early 90s especially, like, were a very interesting time fashion wise. Let's put it
Oh, I
that
love
way.
80, like 80s fashion. I
Oh, no,
always.
it's great. It's great. It's just like you can pick what it is. Like, there's,
Oh yeah, it's a very distinctive look.
yeah, it's a very migraine inducing look. It's like bright colors and wild patterns. It's
Shoulder pads.
shoulder pads. There's scrunchies, so many scrunchies.
Yep. And those little things to help tie your shirt together because your shirt was actually too big. My mom had like a ton of those. They were like, they looked like almost like hair clips, but they were like a ri it was like a ring, and then it had like a bar through the middle, and you would loop your shirt through it.
Oh, those things.
I don't know what they're called. I just
I
know they
no
exist.
idea. I have no idea what they were called. But yeah, it's honestly, I mean, we'll get there. I was almost disappointed at their clothes because they were so tame. I kind of wanted something like wildly 80s.
Yeah, I thought they fit in pretty well though.
But they fit in well. It was just very tame compared to like other characters
Yeah.
in there. But before we get to 1983, we go take a look at Flynn's hideout, and we get the tail end of a conversation between the three of them where apparently Emma has told them Rittenhouse's dirty little secret, as she called it, but we don't get to hear it quite yet because it's not fun.
Yeah. She makes a
And
comment here about how much she missed beer, and I was like, beer's been around for a pretty long time.
And
Probably
so, I mean, it tasted
might have tasted
different
a little
though, yeah.
different, but like, beer's been around for quite a while. I
I
thought that was
mean,
a strange one.
it occurred to me too, I'm not gonna lie.
Is bottled beer kind of like, I don't know. It was an odd comment for me. I don't know why.
I'm sure she, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I would have missed beer that much. Probably would have missed showers a whole lot more.
Air conditioning, central heating.
No, it's construction outside. I gotta close my window. Yeah, Anthony calls the Rittenhouse one like an existential threat to reality, which, not ominous at all. Sounds fun.
Yeah.
And after he hears that, he wants to destroy the machine, and he says that Rufus could probably destroy the lifeboat. But eventually, like, Flint kind of hears him for a quarter of a second, and he's like, no, we stick to the original plan, and we just wipe Rittenhouse from history, because that's super easy to do, as you
Yeah,
know.
well, and my thing too, though, is Anthony's plan of like, oh, we'll destroy it. And they're like, oh, yeah, because they can't just build another one. And they're like, oh, yeah, it'll take 2 or 3 years, though. And I'm like, that's not a long term plan.
No, it is
That's a
true.
very short term plan, actually.
Yeah, 2, 3 years is not that much. I mean, I think we can, like, if Rittenhouse was able to, we know that, they've kind of financed Mason Industries. So if they were able to pull up that amount of money, won't be
Yeah, they
that
just do
hard
it
to get
again.
some more to do it again. Yeah, exactly. So, but okay, we're back with Wayne and Rufus, and we are now March 19th, 1983, and we are at the Toledo Airport, and the 80s are in full gears, like clothes, hair, makeup, patterns, everything, and they we don't see really anything shiny though.
No.
Nothing shiny. The shiny was the only thing we see. And I forgot about this. Rufus spots the A team on the TV, and he notes that they're the same, but they're the time team. And I forgot that it was actually Rufus.
I was going to ask if this was the first time that they referenced themselves as the time team.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Because I don't feel like I've caught it before.
No. And again, like getting into this fandom, and I'm not like that much on Twitter for Timeless or whatnot, but I've always heard of them as the Time Team, and for some reason I thought that was more like a fandom thing, but maybe it was, and maybe they included it then, because that wouldn't be the first time that happens. Hello or intro. But yeah, that's the first time I think we called them the Time Team, and it was actually on the show. Long story short, Rufus and Wyatt are looking for Gilliam's mother, Claire, flight attendant, who's supposed to have a one-night stand with a bartender, which produces a bouncing baby boy named Wes, who turns into a serial killer. Or at least someone who killed two.
Three people.
Three people. Well, we think three.
Yeah,
Turns out.
supposedly.
At this
You know
point,
my
we think
opinion on
three.
that one already.
And Wyatt's plan is to just stop them from meeting. They
Yeah.
don't meet, they don't bang, they don't have a baby. It's simple, right?
I feel like that's like the problem would be is if the same person would be created if they met like 2 days later. Like if she had another layover in Toledo 2 days later.
Biologically speaking, don't want to get into the biology of
Oh, I
things.
understand that. I'm just saying,
Yeah,
like, would the if they had like if that couple had a baby, no matter who the baby was, and it produced the same type of person. He would not succeed.
I don't
It
know it.
wouldn't work.
I don't know enough about brain chemistry And especially the brain chemistry of killers in general, we don't know enough about Wes. I cannot. I
Well, a
feel
lot of them
like.
got hit in the head. Just following true crime. There's a lot of like childhood head injuries. And I don't know if they ever done
I don't
like a
know.
ton of research on that. But there's also like other stuff that plays into factors too. Like I know they've researched like chromosomes and stuff like that too.
Because I mean, technically, if it's not like this time, the chances could be pretty, unless it's like a full gene or something, the chances are pretty slim that it would get someone. I mean, you
Yeah,
see
true.
siblings sometimes who have completely different
Oh
personalities.
yeah, no, definitely.
So I feel like it's not necessarily the most solid plan, but like short of literally killing one of the parents, I feel like it's
Yeah.
probably as close as you're gonna get.
It's a better solution than what I thought he was gonna do last episode whenever all this started, so. You
I
also make a
love
Back to the Future reference here.
that's what I was gonna get at. Rufus is comes in with like all the nerd reference. I love it. Like it's a reverse Back to the Future. But yeah, Wyatt's plan starts. It's off to the great start because the plane Claire is supposed to come with landed early and she's gone.
Yeah.
It
Just
starts
her though.
so good,
All the other flight attendants are still there.
I know. I don't know. She was really eager to get to her hotel, I guess. I mean, to be fair, she probably just wanted to get the hell away because of that douchebag passengers that was probably harassing her through the entire flight.
That's true. Maybe that was it.
So, yeah, I get that. Dude, that dude was annoying. We'll get there later, but oh my God. But anyway, yeah, Wyatt talks to the other flight attendants you mentioned who give them the name of the hotel Claire is going to stay. He really charms this way into this one because he's
He doesn't even, he's
not.
not even that charming. Like, that girl, like, she has
He's
no
hot.
self-preservation instincts.
He's hot. That helps. He's just
I
hot.
guess so. She actually's like, he's cute. And I'm like, I don't think I would give my friends information for a cute guy, but okay. You say
That
so.
was the 80s, though, so that people were maybe less cautious.
Maybe so, yeah.
I mean, I grew up in the early 90s, and you even in like a big city, I was out by myself doing all kind of stuff, and you just get home at a certain time, and until then, do whatever you want, you go see whoever you want, so
Yeah.
it's definitely a little less cautious time. Back to Mason Industries, Denise is furious. It's like Liz is getting a dress down because like she has absolutely no doubt that Lucy knows everything. Especially since she has a tail on, well, not a tail, but like a protection detail on Lucy, so they know Wyatt was there. Which at first, when she gets that report that Wyatt went to Lucy to Lucy's in the middle of the night, I wonder if she goes a little bit like the GL route and like, ooh, no, now he's just still in life with what?
Yeah, well, I mean, he left pretty quickly, so he's only there for like 5 minutes.
But yeah, like Lucy defends Wyatt and like she makes some good point, like you said that first of all, like they never made a deal with Wyatt, so and he has the time machine under his nose the whole time, so yeah, of course he's gonna be tempted to get his wife back. And then there hasn't been that much thought really into how to get Amy back.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And also after the fact that Denise, gave Lucy that flash drive with the family photos, when she says, where was I?
Family photos.
Yeah, so after she gave Lucy the flash drive with the family photos, when Lucy says, like, if it was your family, you'd do the same thing. Yeah, I feel like it's not that big of a jump to make.
Yeah. When she says, like, I'm surprised Wyatt didn't steal the lifeboat sooner, which, like, yeah, that's kind of.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just been building up to this point, and this is where they could fit it in, because I feel like otherwise he would have been like, second episode in, bye.
I think, yeah, you needed to establish the team's dynamic first.
Yeah.
Yeah, we go back after that to the Toledo Express Inn, and the boys arrive, soaked by pouring rain that has starting to that has started, and they find Claire, who's already flirting with Joel, because you know, of course,
Yeah.
so
I
much
feel
for
like
them
this is
not
like,
meeting.
yeah, well, and it's like, if this is the start of a very long, like, list of things where it's like the universe wants this to happen, and Rufus even makes a point later. And
Yes.
it was like this point, and I was like, oh, this is going to be the whole episode, is everything they try to do is just not going to work.
Yeah, it's and it I feel like it's a very good, maybe jumping around a little bit, but there's a very good rhythm to that. Because at first, yeah, there's like those couple things that go wrong, but then kind of Wyatt gets Claire's attention, and you're like, okay, things are not going bad. And then once the friends get in and Wyatt is discovered, like things start descending fast, and it's really like a really, really fast spiral.
Yeah.
The rhythm of that was really good, really well done. we jump back to Mason Industries too, where Gia gets a phone call from Anthony asking for Rufus. And of course, Rufus is not here right now, so yes, that he says he'll only speak to Lucy. And so he tells her to come and meet him alone, and he has a plan to end all of this for good.
This is where I was like, he's definitely gonna die. So they have Emma. He doesn't, he, like, Flynn doesn't technically need him anymore. And here he is going against what Flynn wants. So yeah, he's,
Yeah, the Flynn, the writing
this is
was, the
it.
Flynn was on the wall. No, the writing was on the wall.
Yep.
And since I'll get into Joel and Claire a little bit later, but since we didn't talk about him, Anthony Brühl is played by Matt Frewer. We like slightly talked about him, but not really in detail. His main things that I could see of what he's done. He was in Librarians, where you know him from. He was also Sherlock Holmes in a bunch of TV movies. And I was thinking about him, like, yeah, I could see him as Sherlock Holmes. It's
Yeah, I feel
interesting.
like I've seen a few of those too.
I have not. He was at something called PSI Factor Chronicles of the Paranormal. I have no idea what that is, but he had quite a few credits from that thing. He was in The Stand, like the 1994 miniseries, and I've watched it a lot of time because I love that, both the novel and like the miniseries that I've made on it. And I love that miniseries with what's his name that was on CSI, Gary Sinise. I don't know how to say his name.
Oh, Gary Sinise, yeah.
Gary Sinise, and I cannot remember him. I'd have to go back and watch him. And I think he has like a pretty important role. Like I think he's one of the not necessarily main character, but like main adjacent. And I can't picture him in there in my memories anyway. But my big thing, he was the voice of Panic in Disney's Hercules.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And like I can't because I haven't seen those, like the early Disneys. I've only seen them in French. So I have to go back. Well, I'm starting to go back all the Disneys and watch them all in English. But that's gonna take a minute because there's like 130 movies. So
Yeah.
I've made it to the 101 Dalmatians. That's my next one.
Oh, yeah.
In chronological order. But yeah, I saw that and that made me incredibly excited. That's he's been in a bunch of like he's got 136 credits to his name, so he's been in a lot
He's been in
of
quite a bit, yeah.
he's been in a lot of things. And I won't watch the Librarian yet, but I will eventually. But yeah, and after that very ominous line, we cut to the credits. Dun dun dun.
Yeah, so for our history minute this week, we didn't really have an event, and
I
so I just
know.
picked up a few references that they said. They had a lot of music throughout the show, like throughout the episode, which I thought was really funny that they did have another Culture Club song, but they didn't have Karma Chameleon in there. But instead of kind of focusing on the music, I actually like looked at a few of the shows they mentioned, and then maybe like a couple historical events, but. The first thing that they mentioned was A-Team, and that episode actually didn't actually air for like a few months, I think. But I think what they did was it was episode 13 of the first season, and this was episode 13 of the first season of
Yeah, I saw
Timeless.
that too,
And I think it
yeah.
was called The Beast in the Belly of a Boeing, which is a lot of bees. But the series itself, if you've never seen it, it follows four Vietnam vets who were wrongfully accused and convicted of a crime, and then they're on the run and they help people while they're trying to clear their name. It was remade in, I think, like 2010 as a movie, but it ran from 1983 to 1987 originally with five seasons. And then they also have an episode of Different Strokes playing with Nancy Reagan. That one did actually air that night. And that show is, this is from IMDb. It's The Misadventures of a Wealthy Manhattan Family Who Adopted the Children of Their Late African American Housekeeper from Harlem. And the episode description was, as a reporter for the school newspaper, Arnold learns that drugs are being sold on school grounds. This attracts the concern of First Lady Nancy Reagan, who comes to the school to talk about her anti-drug campaign. So that's why Nancy Reagan was on Different Strokes, was the anti-drug campaign going on at the time. And then Manimal was the other one they mentioned, which I can't say I ever heard of, but it was a very short-lived television series with eight episodes about a man who could turn himself into any animal, and he used that to help the police. It ran from September to December of 1983. So a lot of the references were just 1983 in general, not particularly before or after
I
March
went on
18th.
YouTube to look for Manimal.
Oh, did you
And
watch it?
there's a compilation of just like his transformation. It's something. It's something. I mean, you can't expect 80s CGI to be like groundbreaking.
Yeah.
But the moment where you see him with still like sort of human features, but as an animal, it's something. It's something. And I was at the library working on the outline. It was really hard to stay quiet.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it. I do remember some early like 90s like CGI, and it looked good at the time, but
I
then like
mean,
you go back
I'm
and you're like,
sure
that is
for
not
the time
great.
it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, like watching it 40 years later, it's something.
Yeah.
Oh.
Some other things that I noticed. So at one point he is talking to the flight attendants, and he's saying flight attendant, and Riff is like, they're called stewardesses. But actually, at that point in time, that term had already started to be phased out by 1983 because there were
Oh.
these gender bias regulations that had been passed in the 60s and 70s that were trying to make flight attendant position a little more equal gender.
I
And
didn't know
so, or
that. I
gender
thought that was
neutral. Yeah.
much later.
I thought so too, but apparently it was 60s and 70s. And then another thing he mentions is Lynn Barker's perfect game. And so, in a game against the Toronto Blue Jays, the Cleveland Indians starting pitcher Lynn Barker threw a historic perfect game on May 15th, 1981. The night was cold and misty, and Barker was actually late to arrive because he went to the airport to pick up his brother. And it was only the 10th perfect game in the Major League Baseball history and one of two in Cleveland history, the first being pitched by Addie Joss in 1908.
Did not
So,
think we were going to talk about the Blue Jays on this
yeah,
podcast.
did the, yeah, there they come. And then the last one, I don't know if this was actually a reference or not, but I found it interesting. So, Rufus is talking to Claire's friend, who's blonde. She has like a pink jacket on, and he says it's like the Olivia Newton-John of it all, or something like that, which could be just like a reference to Grease because she is dressed kind of like a pink lady. But that year, 1983, Olivia Newton-John was in another film with John Travolta called Two of a Kind, where these like four angels were in charge of the earth while God went on like a vacation or something. He came back, the earth went to shit. And so he's like, okay, we're just gonna wipe everything off like Great Flood again. And they're like, no, we can prove that humanity's okay. And so they pick like, I think John Travolta, from what I understood, to like prove that humanity was worth saving. And he ends up robbing a bank where Olivia Newton-John was working. And instead of actually like giving him the money, she steals the money herself. And it turns into this whole thing. They die twice. Spoiler, sorry. And the song that goes along with this movie that she sang was called Twist of Fate. And I thought it was a very like Wyatt coded song for this episode. So if you
Yeah, it's a
want to
bit
go
of a
listen to
deep
Twist
cut,
of
but
Fate by
I
Olivia
like it.
Newton-John. Yeah. So I don't know if that was actually the reference or not, but I found it interesting.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that was my history minute because we don't really have a ton to focus
First
on.
and probably last time it will actually last a minute or at least less
Yeah.
than 10 minutes. Yeah. Enjoy
Yeah.
it, don't enjoy it. I don't know, but I'm 99.9% certain that it's the first and only time it happens.
That's good. So, all right.
Yeah.
Moving on to 1983, moving back there. Rufus is playing wingman, and Wyatt basically gets kind of an opening with Claire, and he's really charming. So he's trying to like basically like keep her distracted from Joel the whole night. And he flirts with her while Rufus spends time with her friend, the Olivia Newton-John friend. And Wyatt tries to get them all to go somewhere else, but Claire is waiting for, I'm sure her flight attendant friends. And as they speak, a storm watch is announced on the TV broadcast. And just then, the sheriff busts in and says a tree is now blocking the road, which I don't know how her friends get there later then, since the roads are supposed to be closed. But
All right, I didn't even catch that.
yeah, Claire helps the man, and Joel comes in with his first aid kit. So the whole time, though, like there's obviously a guy injured, and why it's like panicky that they're meeting. But,
He like, but also like he, Joel like really, really wanted to have Claire's attention. Like he was desperate for it the entire time.
yeah.
Like the second he's got an opening, like dude, he's running.
Yeah.
I want to be the
But
hero.
back at Mason Industries, go ahead.
Wait, first I'm gonna talk about I guess I can talk about everybody. First of all, like since we're at the state trooper, he's only credited as state trooper, he never gets a name. He's played by Colin Lawrence, and I think at least recently mostly known for his role of as preacher in Virgin River, which was like, you know, it's the kind of thing like obviously like I watch Virgin River after and they're like, oh, you're here. But yeah, he was recurring in Riverdale, Bletchley Circle, that's how you say it. The San Francisco spin-off he was in. He was in three episodes of Supernatural, every time a different character, so I guess Kripke really liked him. He was also in iZombie for a bit, Smallville, and he has some like I think a recurring role or one-off, I forgot, in Stargate SG-1. Like he's got a lot of credits, like 138 credits to his name, so like dude's been around.
Yeah.
If I go back up, can I might as well talk about Claire and Joel. They're pretty short. Claire Gilliam is played by Amanda Brooks. She is known mostly for she was in season two of Aquarius, which was a show with David Duchovny a few years back. And then the rest is mostly one-offs like Bones, Longmire, Revenge, The Night
Yeah, I went
Shift.
back to the episode of Longmire she was in, and what's interesting is she was actually in it with Brandon Fair, who is in the Night Shift, and she's in the episode of the Night Shift with him too.
Oh, cool. One of the more recent things she was on is called like Super Pumped: The Battle for Uber, which is a mini series about the start of Uber. I did not know they did one. It was apparently with like Gordon Joseph Levitt.
Yeah, I think I
If
saw
I'm
some
mispronouncing
trailer to
names,
it.
like I don't know how people's names are pronounced. It's awful, but it looks interesting, and like I like that actor. He's pretty good, so maybe worth a watch. She says that, and she'll never watch. And Joel is played by Drew Roy. I have thoughts on him, least in like he's acting in here. At least that's the only place I've seen him. It was kind of monotone. But anyway, he starred on Falling Skies alongside Noah Wyle. And Jesse Schramm was on that show too for a bit.
Yeah.
Like, we got a proxy one Chicago connection. Proxy. He was in the movie Secretariat with I forgot who was in it, but he played I think the son of the main character.
Was
Like
Secretariat the
Seth
one with Tobey
Hancock.
Maguire? No, that was Seabiscuit. About horses.
Yeah. It's a
Moving
about a horse.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's got a couple of like one or two offs in something called Lincoln Heights, which I didn't know, but also with John Malkovich, yeah, in Secretariat. He was also in iCarly and recurring in Hannah Montana, so I guess he's been on the Disney Channel for a bit.
Looks like it. Well, iCarly was Nickelodeon.
Oh, it was? I don't know, I didn't watch that. I didn't grow up with a Disney Channel because not American, not North American. And I think honestly both iCarly and Hannah Montana were like I sort of remember Hannah Montana, but I was never into it.
I liked
Because
iCarly. I watched Hannah Montana some, but not a ton.
I feel like if I had been a couple years younger, I probably would have gotten really into Hannah Montana. That was the type of thing that I would have enjoyed. But I don't know. I think I was maybe a bit too old. But yeah, that's our almost all our guests. I'll go over Airplane Douchebag later on.
Yeah. So back at Mason Industries, Mason is trying to convince Denise that he should go with Lucy, but Lucy is willing to and ready to go by herself. And obviously, like, nobody trusts
I
him at
know.
this point either. And I think he's just not understanding that, but he's still like arrogant enough that he's like, I'm going anyway. It's
It's
my business.
yeah, it's really well done because you can clearly see, like he's starting to panic about that for sure.
Yeah.
But at the same time, because he's so arrogant, he's like he's tickled by it. It's like I don't like, but I'm not the center of the attention. Like it should be my thing. It's kind of
Yeah.
a bit of a toddler tantrum. I kind of like it.
Yeah, a little bit. So in 1983, things are not going well at all. The storm is raging outside. Claire and Joel look pretty cozy, and Wyatt is stressed. They decided Rufus will stay with Joel for the next 12 hours while Wyatt keeps flirting with Claire.
Like Rufus is such a cinnamon roll in this episode because
He
like
is.
Wyatt is like he's so stressed out, like pacing back and forth like a tiger in his cage, and
Yep.
Rufus is still like helpful, is like okay, let's calm down, we can do this, we can do that, like everything's gonna be okay. He's
Yeah.
really sweet.
He is. And it's like, you can tell that, like, This is going to go badly for Wyatt.
Oh yeah.
There's no way it's not at this point. But Claire's friend is very into Rufus, and Joel tries to convince her to like convince Rufus to talk to her, and he's like, "Nope, I'm gonna stick here with you." I did laugh though, because he's like, Joel's like, "I think this is the point where he's like, I really want this like specific drink," and he's like, "But I have to go get the blender
Like,
and
yeah, but I
everything."
was really set on it.
Yeah, it was a funny little bit.
It was funny.
But we cut back to Mason Industries, and Lucy and Gia are talking, and they say some interesting things. So Denise, this clip ends when Denise comes in and says they're ready to go. But I think it was interesting here. Kind of the theme of the episode was like, who's telling who what, who trusts who, and it's obvious that like Rufus needs to talk to Gia a little more, but Wyatt is like embodying that idea Gia has of like what it means to trust your partner. And
I can't believe you skipped over the fact that like Gia basically says she's in love with Rufus.
well, yeah, I was getting to that. But yeah, she very much like it upsets her because she does, I think, love him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I think you gotta wonder. I think Rufus's point of view on that is this was Wyatt's thing, so it wasn't necessarily his thing to tell. And on top of that, he's probably still in the perspective of protecting Gia
Yeah.
from everything. And like, Gia's not there. I don't think Gia needs protecting, and I think she doesn't think she needs protecting.
Yeah, well, and there's some things going on right now that would be solved really quickly if Rufus just said something. So
Rufus is very much
he still doesn't know how to talk to her, is the thing.
yeah, I
Like,
think
about important things.
they're pretty new too, you gotta say. So
Yeah,
you're
that's
still
true.
on that level of we're together, but like how deep are we in?
Yeah, because I feel like it's a weirdly established relationship because they knew each other for at least 2 years first. And so
But
you
they
don't know exactly how good of friends they were, because it also was like, it made it sound like he never talked to her.
yeah,
They just sat at the same desk.
it
And
feels like
so,
they were friendly and
yeah.
they obviously liked each other, but
Yeah.
because he they were both kind of scared and intimidated to talk to the other, they stayed on like a very surface level.
Yeah.
So they got to break through that surface level to get deeper.
Yeah.
But yeah, because so Gia's word is if you care about someone, if you trust someone, if you might even love someone, you tell them something like this. And then she goes, "Oh, how did you know, Lucy, by the way?" "Well, Wyatt told me." And the look on Gia's face.
Yep.
Like, wait, what?
Yeah, they're all on the Wyatt ship.
She like Gia's eyes sparkles when she hears about that. She's like, "Ooh, that's juicy." Like we can pull out the t-shirts, the Wyatt shirts,
Yep.
like start distributing them. Sorry. We can't get that. But yeah, it's yeah.
Yeah, so
And that
after
I
what?
love my favorite part is like Lucy kind of gets like the difference between how Rufus acted and how Wyatt acted, and she's like, you know, she gets all flustered. She's like, "No, but he wanted me to cover for him, and you know, it's not like that."
Yeah, I think that's
It's
like it's serving a dual purpose there, because I think she's like trying to comfort Gia. And then also like in that relate and just trying to like deny the relationship between them.
Which makes sense too, because even if he
He's
told
going to get his
her,
wife
he's
back.
still gone to get his wife back.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I love the excuse. Like, I had to buy him some time. I mean, how did you buy him time? Because, you know, if he hadn't gone to see you, he would have had the same amount of time.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a fake excuse. It's more of a I owe it to you to tell you because you're my partner, basically. But yeah, it's just I love this little scene. It was like a little bit of lightness, you know, in the middle of everything.
Yeah.
It was cute.
Yeah, it was like a nice little like reprieve. But so Lucy goes towards the meeting place and Anthony kind of grabs her and drags her through the area trying to lose her tail, and he ends up getting rid of her tracker too, which wasn't really very well hidden.
No,
She's like,
but
"I
I
have a
mean,
tracker, what tracker?" And he's like, "It's right here.
okay.
It's right
I
here."
mean, he probably, Anthony probably knew that she was going to be followed by agents or
Oh
whatnot,
yeah.
but the agents themselves are not subtle. Like, not even
No.
a little.
No.
I
Like,
love, like, it's every show or movie like that, when someone has to go undercover, I find that they're any type of agents, they're not subtle. They usually have like that big earpiece, you know, with a big
yeah.
cord behind the ear. I'm like, it's not even hidden. Like,
Yeah, I mean, part of it's so that we see them too, but yeah, it's
yeah.
it was too obvious. But yeah, so he takes her into a nearby building. But yeah, so I thought it was interesting he mentions like what his family must think of him because he knows they've been interrogated. And so I thought that was interesting given the conversation she and Jiwoo just had about like what they're sharing and things like that. But also like it does keep them safer not to know what's going on. But yeah, I thought he had a big turnaround here too, like really fast. So whatever Emma must have told them must have really scared him.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, again, he called it existential threat to reality. So
Yeah.
it's pretty big. And I mean, he kind of talks about it here. He says like they want to change history in their favor, like much earlier than what they're like. They basically want to do what Flynn is doing,
Yeah.
but the opposite. Like, instead of changing history to wipe Rittenhouse out of history, they want to go back and change the history so that they control everything in the present.
Yeah.
So yeah, that could get pretty bad pretty quick.
Yeah. Pretty messy,
So
so.
yeah, and you know, on top of that, everything that he's helped Flynn do, it's probably weighing on him more and more.
Yeah.
Like, he at this point, he really looks like he's carrying the world on his shoulders.
Yeah. I
He
mean, he
looks,
has since like
yeah,
Las Vegas, really.
he looks
When Rufus finds him in
exhausted.
that bar. Sorry, I keep yawning, guys. So if y'all hear a really weird noise on my end, that's what
He's
it
yawning, I'm coughing, you
is.
know, we're good.
Yep.
But yeah, he
Sorry,
looks
woke up at like 4:30
exhausted.
my time. Yeah, no, he is. I
Yeah,
feel like
like,
he's slowly like gone through like a okay, I can justify this, I can't justify this. I can justify this. I can't justify this. And now he's on like the downward swing of like, I really can't justify this anymore. So we're gonna destroy the mothership.
Pretty sure he's fully depressed at that point.
Oh yeah. I mean,
Like, it wouldn't have been like, if you look at things just here without knowing what happens at the end. And I mean, even the fact, like, you know, he wants to blow up the mothership, to me, it's within the realm of possibilities that he would have taken himself with the mothership.
yeah, I could see that. Because I think him and Flynn and Wyatt are all in kind of the same position of like not being able to face their families after
Everything
what
they've
they've
done.
done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I still think that's a cop out for Flynn and what he said, but I do understand it. Like
It's yeah,
it's a cop out.
it's idealistic, really.
Yeah, less so in, I think, Anthony's, because Anthony isn't like bringing them back from the dead only to abandon them.
Yeah, I think we talk about it, but I think for Flynn, it's also a way of justifying what he's doing.
Yeah.
It not really makes it okay, but because he's gonna punish himself afterwards, that like it's his consequence for doing all the
Yeah.
bad thing he's doing for this one good thing, and he
Yeah.
doesn't even like get the reward of it.
Yeah. I can see that. So, yeah, so we cut back to 1983, and it looks like Wyatt has Claire's attention until this jerk comes in, and Wyatt jumps in and kind of gets him to go away. And they kind of have a talk about like
That
what
dude
they
is
wanted
so
to.
gross.
Yeah, like it's every guy that you never wanted to follow you around that just has like a weird attention thing.
It's like
But
the epitome of a douchebag. But
yeah.
also, like, Wyatt going all protective and like almost physical has no right being this attractive.
No, like, and I like this is also, I think, interesting of like at the point where he would seem most chivalrous is when like the first alarm bell starts to go off for Claire, because he's like, they start talking about like what they want to do, and Claire's like basically like, I can't go home for all these reasons, and he's like, oh, Cleveland, and she's like, how'd you know that? So obviously she has a little more self-preservation than her friends do, but
Slightly.
yeah, that seems kind of sad too though, because he's like, tomorrow I get to see my family for the first time,
Yeah,
and it's
there.
like,
I
oh,
mean,
you know, it's not gonna
there's
happen.
another like big parallel. Like they're almost in this, not really in the same boat, but you know. The fact that she's gonna get pregnant with Wes, it's probably the thing that brings her back to her family because it's good news, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's
And
what it was.
Wyatt potentially like deprives her of that to get his good news, like to get his family back.
Yeah, true.
But quickly, I'm not quickly. I'll do it now. The douchebag who's credited as airplane passenger because they're nicer than me, is played by an actor called Pete, and I'm gonna butcher his last name, Ploshek or something like that.
Closek, yeah.
Ploshek, Ploshek, I don't know. He was a main character in something called Liberty Crossing, which I don't know. He played Leonardo in both the 2014 and 2016 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. He had like a little recurring role in Teen Wolf. He had a role in Captain Marvel. Brett
Yeah, he's the
Johnson. I
pilot.
haven't watched it in a while, but I feel like I remember him.
He was kind of a jerk.
Oh, so it's a thing.
Yeah, I think it's his face, but yeah, no, he played one of the pilots that like Carol Danvers trained with.
Yeah, and he had a couple. A few like one-offs like 9-1-1, Shameless, Parks and Recs. I mean, he wasn't in like a whole lot of things. But we're back in the episode, like we as Claire and Wyatt are talking about all of this, like their family and whatnot. That's when shits go down, like downhill, real, real fast. Because the other flight attendant somehow found a way around the tree that fell down the road. And they barge in and completely blow away its cover. And like, it's so well done because, like, the second they come in and Wyatt and Rufus see them, the look of sheer panic in their eyes, like, they know they're done.
Yeah. They're like, okay, gig is up.
Yeah. And so as soon as the other flight attendant tells Claire, like, no, he knew your name and whatnot, and Joel jumps into action. He was so ready for it. And kicks Wyatt and Rufus out of the bar. Well, mostly Wyatt, but Rufus follows. And
Yeah.
I was thinking in the original timeline, I bet he's the one who sends off airplane douchebags. And that's how
Yeah. I
he
bet
ends
so.
up in a
I bet
room.
it's just a yeah.
Because, like, he was ready for, like, his opportunity. The second he had an opening, he was going to come for it.
Yeah. And so Wyatt just kind of took that guy's place.
Yep.
Yep, makes sense.
And so Rufus and Wyatt ends up in the hallway, and Wyatt is spinning. He's so desperate. Like, things go up to 100. It's like two people decide to bang in a hotel, and my wife dies because of it. And When you think about it, it really takes nothing.
Yeah, I mean, well, and I feel like that's like a almost too detached. Like, that's not exactly how it works.
No, but it's kind of like the butterfly effect.
So, like, I feel like that's like the, I know Rufus, like, he's like, don't say fate, basically, to Rufus in this conversation. But, that's how everything happens.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Everything happens for like from one moment, one decision. And so I feel like he's narrowing it down a little bit too much there. But
I
yeah,
get
like
it
you can
though.
tell he's very
Yeah.
desperate for like because of that way of thinking.
Yeah, he's totally spinning. He's panicking. He sees that what he thought was gonna be, I think he had this idealistic idea in his head that it was gonna be super simple and all you have to do is keep them apart. And just everything went bad.
Yeah.
And so he still wants to obviously have them not be together. Rufus is starting to get a bit worried, but no, the new plan is only to kidnap Joel because that's so good. And Rufus is not exactly impressed, but he kind of agrees to it. I think Rufus is starting to see that, things are gonna be not gonna end well one way or another. But he also can't stop Wyatt. Like there, no one would be able to stop Wyatt right now.
Yeah, no, it
Yeah.
wouldn't work.
I like though, he points at all the flaws in Wyatt's plan, and it's every single issue that they're gonna run into.
Yeah.
Because like there's a cop and there's a storm, and like yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and it all goes wrong exactly at those points, yeah.
Exactly. We go back in the present for a little bit, and Lucy meets Denise in her car, and just the two of them talk about her meeting with Anthony. So she tells Denise about Anthony's plan to destroy the mothership and how he wants them to destroy the lifeboat, and she thinks it's a good idea, and eventually she convinces Denise, but Denise tells her that they have to keep all of that a secret from Mason, and she shows him the photos from his meeting with a certain Rittenhouse guy who turns out is Lucy's biological dad, and she explains that to Denise.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting because I feel like the Cahill thing is something that keeps getting like dropped and then woven back in and then kind of dropped and woven back in. And so I think it's finally like interesting to see like we're getting close to the end of the season and now like this is all kind of starting to wrap up. You can see where it's kind of strings are being aligned and
Yeah, things are starting to come together.
yeah.
It's funny because she's barely even shocked at this point. It's more like she looks and like, of course he's Rittenhouse because like that's my life now. It's
Yeah.
like nothing is simple, nothing is good. Like if something can go to shit, it will. It's yeah, she's kind of done with the whole thing. Like
Yeah.
she's they're all really like tired of it.
Yeah.
I think mentally exhausted. We go back to 83 and the storm is getting worse because of course. And Rufus managed to get Joel to follow him because like apparently there's a flood in the kitchen. Yeah, they talk quickly about his sister living with two kids in his trailer. I know it's not the case, but that's like Joel gives me the creeps. My thing is just because of how he's portrayed,
Yeah.
like he's very monotone and whatnot. He gave me flashback to like Dexter.
Yeah. Well, I think too they didn't really give him much character as much as they gave Claire. And so we're getting this
For
very
sure.
one-sided view of like this relationship too.
Like I almost want to portray him as a like hidden serial killer, but it's not even good. It makes the story much more impactful if he's actually like a good innocent guy that just liked Claire.
Yeah.
But yeah, it gives me the creep. But maybe that's on purpose too, so that we don't get too attached to this character, because in the end of the day, he dies because of Wyatt. So we need to still be rooting for Wyatt, not that guy.
Yeah. It reminds there's like a I don't know, there's just like I think that could probably be it. It like I'm trying to think of what it, there's something it reminds me of in a show of basically and I can't remember what show it is now. I had it in my head, but I'll think of it in like 2 hours after we've done like
Can
recorded.
add
But
a little like voice note in
yeah,
this point in this
but
episode.
it's basically like he doesn't really have an impact much until he dies. And so like his like existence is in almost entirely on the periphery, and it's kind of coming in when he needs to, up until the point where it's like super critical where he dies. And so I thought that was an interesting way to portray that too. But you're right, like we don't get attached to him because we at the end of the day do want to root for Wyatt.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah, he apologizes to him. And no, I think it was more like, I'm sorry about your sister, but I think it's also a way of saying I'm sorry for everything we're about to do to you.
Yeah.
And like they're walking towards Wyatt, and Wyatt is waiting for them, and of course, Airplane Douchebag is back, completely shit-faced. And
Yeah.
he's willing to pick a fight because that's what drunk guys do, especially douchebags. And so he, like, honestly, Wyatt would have taken care of him in like 2 seconds flat, but the sheriff's comes in at this point because of course he does. This is really very much the episode of when something can go wrong, it will, at the worst possible time too. Because like,
What is that, Murphy's Law?
yeah, it's pretty much this. Maybe they should have called that episode that, Murphy's Law. And again, like the sheriff, so he interrupts the fight and he's kind of willing to go, like, okay, like you guys stop fighting, and there's that. And of course, at this moment, he sees the gun at Wade's hip. And long story short, Wade gets arrested. It's a whole mess.
Yeah, which I don't know that he like this seems like a little bit drastic to just get arrested right then.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't know about the gun laws in this particular place, but like, I feel like you guys have something where people can carry gun if they have the right permits.
I'm not sure about the 80s, that's the thing.
Oh, I have no, like, I don't know, gun laws are just, they're befounding to me. I don't understand them. But
Oh,
anyway,
that was something I forgot about in the history minute was seatbelt laws, which didn't start coming into effect really
oh,
until
right.
like the following year. And it still took a while for all the states to catch on, but yeah, 1983, there weren't like strict seatbelt laws yet.
I have a vague memory of the early 90s where my parents would always make me buckle up. Like that was a reflex when we got into the car. But I have that sensation that it was not for ev like everybody didn't do that. So I don't know how seatbelt laws, at least in France, were rolled out, but I feel like that was late 80s, early 90s, I think.
Yeah. I don't remember seatbelt laws so much coming into effect. I remember restaurants no longer having smoking sections.
I remember that. And that was a great thing for me because, like,
I hate so much
when
of
that
myself.
happened, I was getting like bronchitis quite a bit, and people like cigarette smoke would usually make me sick for a bit. Like,
Yeah.
I think I had like a touch of asthma or something like that. That was probably the beginning of it. And so, like, the fact that indoor smoking was like stopped over the course of this year was such a life changer for me.
Yeah.
I'm just writing a seat belt. Curious now.
Got us off track.
So big legislation. Australia, Canada, Kingdom, United States. Rear passengers, 1990 in France. Let me see if I can find the
Yeah, I want to
US.
say I remember it being like backseat passengers first, which doesn't really make sense safety wise, but
It says that
that was where kids at,
1984.
so.
Yeah, and like you said, like depending on the states, it went as far as like the 60s, basically. But yeah, so that's probably why, like, rear passengers, 1990 in France. So I was 4. Yeah, makes sense that early 90s, like, not everybody was doing it. And my dad was
Yeah.
insist, yeah, because that was a pretty new thing. But yeah, it's telling me, right? Yes. We cut back to Flynn's hideout where Anthony is working on the mothership. I don't know what happened to me. I like you get like a shot of the circuits of the
Yeah.
mothership. For some reason, I paused and I was trying to figure out he was actually rigging it to explode at this point. And I'm looking at this for like 10 seconds. I'm like, but I don't understand electronics like at all. Like, what am I doing?
We have no clue.
It's the side effects of looking at all the details way too fast, and you're like, what is, I don't understand how that works. That's not gonna work anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I like here Emma like offers to help him and he says no, and then Flynn's like, I've learned there's no point in rushing Anthony. And I was like, that was the throwback to whenever he was like, trying to put the little nuclear
Yeah.
whatever thing
With kitchen gloves.
you with kitchen gloves and there's like a raid going on. I
Yeah.
thought that was a nice throwback.
That was cute. But yeah, so eventually like they leave and the camera pans out to a half open bag with C4 in it, and like no wonder he gets killed. Like Emma has like a direct line of sight to that
Yeah.
bag that was half open with like two blocks of C4 on it.
Yeah.
It's
Obvious.
not great. We go back to 1983, and Rufus bursts into the sheriff's office. Well, the office where the sheriff is holding Wyatt. And he tries to get the sheriff away, and he makes like a Haley Joel Osment reference.
Yeah, he's like,
It's
it's a guy named Haley Joel.
like pale,
Sixth
creepy
Sense, yeah.
looking. Yeah.
Yeah, Sixth Sense.
Yeah. Great movie. And Wyatt just takes him down, takes the sheriff down while he's distracted. He's escalating. Like, even in
Yeah.
his behavior, you can tell things are escalating.
Oh, yeah.
And Rufus points him too, like, I had him. I was gonna take him away. You did not have to do that. And when he's losing all sense of, he can't think pro like can't think clearly. He's not thinking clearly at this point. He's just too desperate to, yeah, desperate.
Yeah.
And so Rufus tells him that the bar is closed, and Joel and Claire went to her room, which I think we forgot to mention that we know the room number. I forgot the room number. I forgot the room number. I forgot the room number. Go back in my notes, go back in my notes, go back in my notes. So Claire's room is 237.
Yeah, I
And
saw like somebody on the trivia for like IMDb or Amazon
yes,
said that that was the Shining
it's
room number.
the haunted room number in like the Stanley Kubrick, the Shining. So like that was cute because it's very much the same kind of atmosphere, honestly. Like the
A little bit.
storm and yeah. Rufus tries to kind of settle Wyatt down a little bit and he asks him like, what about Jessica? What would she think? And it kind of stops Wyatt for a second, a couple seconds. Ultimately, because like he knows Rufus is right, but he really can't think clearly. He just has to do whatever he has to do to get Jessica back. He's so close. He can't think of not a failing, really. Like it's failure is not an option.
Yeah.
He really like Matt Lanter really plays that whole thing really well.
He did. Yeah. So, yeah, so I lost my place on this.
Yeah, they end up going to. Wyatt ends up running up
Okay.
to room 237.
Yeah, so he's going up to room. I found it. Sorry, I like screen scrolled up. Y'all should have heard me last week. There's a whole outtake where I thought I deleted my notes and I didn't. It was awful. Me and electronics. But anyway, so Wyatt goes to Claire's room and takes Joel out of the room, and this is the point where he like Claire obviously thinks he's like some kind of like obsessed stalker. Because she's like, because the way he sounds like one too. Like if we heard this script anywhere else, that's what we think was going on.
Oh, for sure.
But outside, he manages to get away.
It's
Joel does.
yeah, it's so fun. Like this scene, you can look at it from the different perspective, because like from an outside point, like us knowing everything we know, it's kind
Yeah.
of hilarious because you know like the double entendre and whatnot.
Yeah.
But like you see it from Wyatt, and it's again, it's like that desperation, like everything's going
Yeah.
bad, and it's his last effort to make things not happen. And then you look at it from Joe and Claire's perspective, and it's so terrifying. It's
Yeah.
like this dude who looked like he was normal, and turns out he became crazy obsessed, and he's pointing a gun at them just because they were about to have sex. Like it's just.
Yeah. Yeah.
It should not be this funny, but it's really funny to me,
Yeah.
at least.
No, so like outside, they're in the storm, and Joel manages to get away from Wyatt. My problem here was they were both wearing similar clothes, and it was dark, and so it was kind of hard to like you knew Joel was the one running, but they were both wearing like dark clothes, blue jackets. So at some point though, he like gets hit by debris from the storm, and then like falls over a car, and falls onto the little parking spot. Concrete thing barrier
Yeah.
and hits his head, and he looks like he's gonna be fine at first. And then Wyatt kind of pulls him up, and he's not, and he dies. And so you can see like how devastated Wyatt is when he realized what happened right there. Because the whole time, his whole
He's in
mantra was, is not, nobody's
shock.
gonna get hurt.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna get hurt.
It's okay because nobody's getting hurt, yeah.
Yeah. And
And
so this
it's
is
not
like
okay.
worst case scenario of it wasn't even like him directly who did it.
No,
It was
he
just.
yeah,
Yeah.
like he didn't
His like
kill
his
him by
actions
his own
caused
hand.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so it was like, you know, he wasn't dead by something Wyatt did, but it was an accident he did kind of cause.
Yeah.
And so,
It's really like the last 10 minutes or so,
yeah.
they really feel like they have that nightmare quality of like
Yeah.
everything going wrong no matter what you try.
Yeah.
And that's like really the pentacle of that
Yeah.
nightmare.
Yeah, so this is where Rufus runs in, he finds Wyatt and says like we have to run. And so presumably they run back to whatever barn they hid the lifeboat in. And Wyatt's kind of in shock.
This one is heartbreak. Like it hurts to
Yeah,
see and
because I
hear
mean
Wyatt this way.
he's still trying to justify like all of this, like, she's gonna hate it, but she'll be back. Like, I did this and it was bad, and this is not exactly what I wanted to happen, but she'll be back. And so, of course, like, that's when the, like, alarm bells were really going off, because, like, that's definitely not what's gonna happen.
Yeah, it's the fact that Jessica's gonna be alive, that's the one redeemable thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I just hate seeing Wyatt like this. Like, you just want to
Yeah.
give him a hug.
Yep. But yeah, so back at Mason Industries, Mason finds Denise and she refuses to tell him anything. And I think it's just interesting here because I think he has finally figured out, like, oh, she might know something and she's keeping it a secret from me and I'm the boss around here. And she's like, quickly corrects that
No,
thinking.
you're not.
Yeah. And
She
so
has some like epic burns.
she does, like,
It,
he, like, gets his
like,
butt handed to him in that conversation.
I know it. Like, you're upset because your bosses are upset that you'd love a level. Well, you should talk to us too. Like, ooh, shots
Yeah.
fired.
Yeah. And so they're talking though, and the life com boat comes back. And so as soon as he steps out, Wyatt is arrested. And he really doesn't care that he's getting arrested. He just
No.
wants to know if Jessica's alive. And he's so hopeful. And he's like, tell me about my wife. Because
His
Lucy got left
eyes, like
behind.
the
Yeah.
hope in his eyes, like, tell me about Jessica. Like, I'm gonna
Yeah.
hear that it was worth it.
Yeah. And so, like, Lucy got be left behind. So presumably, if he stopped Jessica's killer this whole time, they would have been together. But this, if they had stopped Jessica's killer, would he be part of the time team? That's the question.
It's like th this is I spent a moment on that because, okay, so history has changed somehow, not for Jessica and Wyatt, obviously, but they did save these two women, and Wes Gilliam doesn't exist, so like the fact, first of all, like the fact that Rufus, he takes the tablet and he sees straight like the two other women. How do they know about these two other
That's what
women?
I wrote that
Yeah,
too, to say
there's like
there's
a
no way they would have
few,
known.
there's like a few little things that are a little like off.
Yeah. They
You
wouldn't
can
have known that
still,
who those two women were to even look them up.
yeah. But at first, I'm like, how would Lucy know that he was trying to stop Wes Gilliam to save his wife, but she never mentions Wes. She only
Yeah.
says Jessica is still alive. So you can still think that she thinks that he's gonna, and she never mentions Wes during this whole episode after they leave. So she can still
Yeah.
know that he's going to stop his wife from getting killed, even if she has like a different story in mind because the story has changed.
Yeah.
Because, like, in this new timeline, Flynn cannot have told them that it was Wes Gilliam because Wes Gilliam doesn't exist. We're getting at this in one of those examples where, like, time travel kind of,
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah, there's it made a like it would have if they had just waited for Rufus to Google the two names, I
Yeah.
think that would have made that would have solved that little plot hole.
Yeah, it was really just that one tiny
Yeah.
minor thing because the rest of the dialogue works.
Yeah.
But yeah, he found those women a little too fast.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting of like, okay, so if Wes Gilliam wasn't the killer, which I kind of already thought was probably the case
Yeah, you had that.
based on what he said. But if he wasn't the killer, was he Rittenhouse? Was Flynn trying to kill him? Or did Rittenhouse somehow blame all three of the
Oh
murders on
wait,
him?
this is the time of the episode where I stop my video.
Yeah. I just thought it was interesting because otherwise, like, why was Flynn so adamant that this was the guy? Did he find that out from Rittenhouse research, or was there something he didn't want? Was there something that like he needed from this guy? And so he just told
Picture me
Wyatt.
zipping my
Yeah.
mouth. locking
Yeah,
it
so
and
I'm
throwing away
assuming
the
there's
keys.
something with that, because otherwise, like, why would they tell him the wrong person? But
Next.
yeah, so
No, but
Gia
like
comes up to Denise.
just gotta give it to Matt Lanter here, because he that performance is really great. Like
It is
Wyatt,
great.
he literally cannot comprehend what's happening. He was
No.
so sure that Jessica was alive. Like, he's stuttering and he can't accept it.
Yeah.
He's
Well,
like,
and
no, Jessica's alive. Like, Jessica's alive. Like,
yeah.
you're
Well,
wrong.
because I mean, that's
Jessica's
what would have
alive.
made it all worth it. So now
Exactly.
it's not
It's
even worth it.
like he can't handle that it didn't work and that a man died because of him for
Yeah.
nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's
So Gia comes up to Denise and says there was an explosion in Oakland, which Anthony had told Lucy to watch out for. Which I thought was interesting. I think during his conversation, he also said your friend Gia, like he didn't know Gia. But anyway, Gia does find the explosion in Oakland. And so they make it to the site, but there's no sign of the mothership. However, they do find Anthony dead. Which kind of saw that coming. But Rufus kind of asks like what they're gonna tell his family, and she says that he died serving his country. So kind of like, in the end he tried to do something
He
good,
tried
so
to do
she's
the
gonna
right
honor
thing,
that. Yeah. And then we cut to Lucy, who's going to the Cahill house to confront her father, and she kind of has a conversation with him of basically like, I know who you are
I know
and
you know
you
who
know who
I
I
am,
am. And he's like, good, I'm glad we have a lot to talk about. And that's kind of where it ends. But it's
Tells her,
like,
like, you're part of Rittenhouse too.
yeah, whether you like it or not. And it's like, yeah, I think she'd rather have the not version.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah,
Yeah,
so
that's
that's the end of our episode.
It's a good episode. Like, it's
It is
the
good.
pacing of it is really good, and I love that it's a really dark episode again, and it very much has that horror movie feels to it.
Yeah, it's like it just keeps getting kind of like worse and worse and worse and worse, and then it gets really bad. Yeah.
But at the same time, they managed to have like tiny instant of comedy,
Yeah.
like just one-liners or little like body comedy moment almost.
Yeah.
Like some of the looks that are exchanged, there's one, like, we didn't talk about it, but at the very beginning when Rufus like bumps into Claire to get the key, and like Wyatt picks it up and like gives it back and starts like flirting with her. Wyatt kind of looks back from the jukebox and he's like, yeah, like dude got
Yeah.
some move. Like there's little moments like that that just and like the little reference, like the Haley Joel reference, it's like a
Yeah.
critical time. It's like, nah, it's that kid, like pale, creepy looking. So like those little things sprinkled in it, kind of give a little bit of levity to it. So
Yeah. Yeah, they make it like it's not all just down, which I like. I like that in the show.
it's
But
they did pretty good.
yeah. And
But
then I
yeah,
guess my
that's
big
about it.
theory for the episode
Oh,
is
you're serious. Sorry.
Wes Gilliam theory of there's something going on there. Either Flynn wise or Rittenhouse wise.
We shall see.
Yeah, so
That's about
follow
it
us
for
on
us, yeah.
Twitter and Instagram at BIT Lifeboat on Twitter/X and Back in the Lifeboat on Instagram and Threads. Rate and subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Podbean. It was really cool seeing our Spotify wrap up this
Yes,
year.
wrap up.
Yeah, because I mean,
Like obviously
I
we're
feel like
not
it was
like
more than
a
we ever expected.
Yeah, it would like we're not a viral podcast by any means,
No.
but we're what, like we're 6-ish month in, a little more
Yeah.
now. It's been great. It's been fun. Yeah,
Yeah, thank you
we're
guys for listening.
for real. Thank you so
Yeah.
much. It's and it's just it's been really fun to really just do it, even.
Yeah, I know. It's been like I don't know. I can't say that I've listened to a lot of podcasts, and I can't say I ever thought I would be like making one myself. So this is kind of cool
Yeah.
to me. But yeah, so spread the word to any of your friends or family who are Timeless fans, so they can reminisce and watch along with us for the first time. I love our Timeless group chat
It's so good.
with some
I
of our
love
friends that
it.
we have,
Yeah.
because they're always like, my so and so is watching, Timeless now, because
I
I
know.
recommended it. It's always fun to hear
Someone
that.
was like, yeah, one of my family members recovering from surgery, and she just got a Hulu because of Black Friday sale. So I told her to watch Timeless. I'm like, yay, one more.
But yeah, so our next episode, we're gonna be covering season 1, episode 14, titled "The Lost Generation," which I assume that means we're going to like World War I, post World War I, because that's the Lost Generation.
I guess you'll see once we get
I
on.
guess we'll see. So watch and email us your thoughts at backinthelifeboatpod@gmail.com. Then also shout out to our friend Manny, who's editing this and listening along during this episode, all our shenanigans.
Yeah.
This will be our last episode in December, so we'll actually break for Christmas and then come back in January after episode 14. So you get one more episode in 2023 and
Yeah.
then break for New Year. Thank you guys for listening. Bye.
Bye.